Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of January, Anno Domini 2011. And as we hurtle headlong into the second decade of the 21st century, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites of the Future. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I say, do you guys remember how to do this?
No freaking clue. At 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose.
I was going to say, at least I had an advantage. I was here doing a Thursday show.
Yeah, right.
So I remember at least how to operate the board.
I remember this. This is radio, isn't it?
I think so, because we definitely have the faces for it, not TV.
Ain't that the truth? All right, we're going to start with the new, you know all about this, but for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, we are the longest running computer show in the known universe, and you can give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free 1-800-790-0415. You can also listen to us online at jazz901.org. You can join us in, IRC chat at Pound Soundbites. You can catch us on Ustream. You can send us a tweet, sound_bites, and become a friend, a fan of the page. It's just going to be you know, a highly exciting afternoon of cool things. And we'll start.
Oh, one thing before we get into the news,
we won't start.
And since the polka dots are still here and they can hear us.
Yeah.
In the office, so I know they're listening. But, well, we got a special.
Whether they want to be or not.
Yeah. We're going to put down a challenge. And, you know, I know all of our great listeners out there in Soundbites, you know, that have been with us for the past 21 years are going to want to help support us on this. Coming March 12th, you know, we're going to be plugging this right on through to the end of that, folks.
But, and that's a Saturday, by the way.
It's a Saturday. Now, here's something. Now, like I say, Rob has always been very innovative in trying to come up with great ideas. And him and Laurel Ann, God bless that young lady. Love her.
She works harder than any
person
I've ever met.
Rob's lucky to have her.
Yes.
So anyways, they have planned March 12th. Put that on your calendar. March 12th. Because we're going to have a challenge here, folks. And we're starting it up. Of course, you know, sound bites. We just can't let things just be. We got to add a little twist to it. Come March 12th, we're going to have a pancake breakfast here, right here at the school. And, oh, guess what? You're going to be able to be here from, I believe it's from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. They're going to be serving all the pancakes you can eat, all the orange juice, sausage, and everything else. But you know what? Just not to make it that simple. You're going to be able to watch the polka guys, if you really want to, from 10 to 12, and then us from 12 to 2. Now, here's the challenge. We're going to be selling tickets for
they're only
$5.
It's cheap. It's ridiculous. $5 for an entire pancake breakfast, all you can eat.
And we're going to have giveaways and everything else. But here's the challenge. When you get your tickets and you pay for them, you have to let the folks know that you're going to want them from Soundbites. Not the polka dots.
Which doesn't mean you have to come in at noon. You can come in right at 10 when it
Anytime
opens.
Anytime you want. We'll be here early. You know, who knows? You might even see us helping us, you know, make up some of the.
You might see us flipping pancakes.
Yep, I've been there, done that too. And you never know. We might shock you on that. But this is going to be one event that you're going to want to put on your calendar right now. So there's going to not be any excuse that, you know, oh, well, I forgot about that. I'm going to be busy. Put it on your calendar now. You just put up that brand new calendar to start out the new year. Flip it up a couple months. Go to March 12th and put it down that you're going to be at Greece Olympia High School here on Maiden Lane.
In the cafeteria.
In the cafeteria, busy helping sound bites. So I don't want to hear any excuses, and I want it loaded, loaded with soundbite listeners.
And by the way, if you call Laurel Ann Romeo, if you're a business and you're listening, we're going to be having placemats. You can have an ad on the placemat. Call Laurel Ann Romeo. The phone number is 967-6800, 967-6800.
Actually, there's a different number on the website for buying tickets.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
No, that's for tickets.
This is for the placement.
This is
for businesses,
for placemats.
Yeah.
So call Laurel Ann Romeo at that number, or call the station and ask for Laurel Ann. They'll get you to her one way or another.
Yeah,
that's
way
not
to
really
you.
A problem. So you should do that, because it's going to be, we're looking forward to it. We love to see
this
all
is going to be a ball, and again, it's another chance. See, all the proceeds are going, just so you know, I mean, the Kiwanis Club that I belong to is going to be here helping with this, because we have some experience in this. We've done it for a number of years. I even had my apron for the pancake breakfast for the Kiwanis.
You look so cute in that little apron.
Thank you.
Just a little French maid apron with
you
the
got
lace
it.
On it.
Yeah,
oh, I like
yeah.
that one.
Mm-hmm. But... you know, I mean,
as long as you stop at the apron.
No, as long as you
no, keep
going.
Yeah, keep going after the
outfit. Yeah.
And my back is to the camera.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, you folks definitely you want to come down. It's going to be a great time. And like I said, we're also going to have some great giveaways.
Yeah, we are.
And you know, you got to stay tuned. But you know, please. We got to beat the polka dots. This is one way, because all the proceeds are going to benefit Jazz 90.1.
Tickets go on sale Monday, January 24th, and can be purchased by calling 585-966-2660. Or you can purchase securely online at jazz901.org.
So there you go. So do that, because it'll be fun. All right, news of the week. The Consumer Electronics Show, CES, just ended.
Which we didn't go to.
Which, oddly, neither Jazz 90.1 nor Bob the Solicitor sent us to CES this year.
Yeah.
I'm bitterly disappointed in both of them.
What's with that?
I do not know.
We have to talk to management.
We have to talk to management. I will have to berate Bob the Solicitor. Bodan was trying to get him to send us. The funny thing is, I know Bob the Solicitor because he's a coffee fan.
Ooh. Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that they were the same guy at first.
Oh, okay.
I know that.
All right.
Well. All right. The Consumer Electronics Show, CES, was all about tablets this year. Tablets running the Android operating system mostly. If I told you about all the tablets, we'd never get to a phone call. So I'll basically talk about one company. Dell, on Thursday, announced a tablet with a 7-inch touchscreen and said it plans to launch a 10-inch tablet later this year for business customers. The Streak 7 tablet runs Google's Android 2.2 and is powered by NVIDIA's Tegra 2 dual-core processor. The tablet will be upgraded to Google's Android 3.0 OS, codenamed Honeycomb, soon after its launch, and it weighs less than a pound. The tablet will be available through T-Mobile in the U.S. in the next few weeks and will work with the wireless carrier's 4G network. The tablet will be available for purchase through contracts or prepaid plans through T-Mobile, though pricing information was not immediately provided. Dell plans to sell the Streak 7 globally, but there were no further details on when it will be available worldwide. The Streak 7 tablet has a 1.3-megapixel front-facing camera and a 5-megapixel camera on the back. The display has a Gorilla Glass screen, which helps make it more sturdy. The screen is also used with Dell's Venue Pro rugged smartphone, and that same screen is on the Droid and a bunch of other things as well. I've actually seen video, although I've been afraid to try it myself, I've actually seen video of somebody taking a key to the glass and scratching like mad and nothing happens to the glass. That's Gorilla Glass from Corning.
Cool.
There's always this guy at the CES and other trade shows that has one of these phones that are supposed to be unbreakable, and video always surfaces of somebody breaking it.
No, they're not unbreakable. No, they never say
they're
unbreakable.
They advertise.
They're scratch resistant is what Gorilla Glass is.
Yep.
Well, I wonder if they've got it in a form of plastic too, because I got a new windshield for my motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
And it's scratch resistant.
Yeah.
And they show running steel wool.
Yeah, it might be. It might
over
be Gorilla Glass. It still might be the same
thing.
Okay,
that makes
although,
sense.
Although, you know,
they didn't
calls
call
it Gorilla Glass, that doesn't mean it's actually all glass.
Yeah, fibers in that. Yeah,
right,
because,
right.
Yeah, I say it shows this demo.
It rolls off the tongue better than a polycarbonate silicate.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing that. The Streak 7 includes support for Flash 10.1 to play movies and games on the internet. It has Dell Stage user interface, which makes it easier to find movies, books, and other documents. Dell also plans to announce a tablet with a 10-inch screen later this year for business customers. The tablet will blend business-related software and services so the company can remotely manage data and connect to offices. The Streak 7 tablet will be a complimentary offering to the current Streak, a mobile device with a 5-inch screen that includes a smartphone and tablet features. Dell has also started shipping the Inspiron Duo, a netbook tablet hybrid in which the 10.1-inch screen flips around to turn the device into a tablet. Dell also announced its Venue smartphone, which has a 4.1-inch screen and an 8-megapixel camera, unlike the existing Dell Venue Pro device, which runs on the Windows Phone 7 and is for business users. The Venue does not have a slip-out keyboard, and it runs the Android OS. The smartphone will be available unlocked on Dell's website in the next few weeks. Yes, you heard that right. Unlocked, so you can put it on whatever carrier you want. So, we have a poll of the week up at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the question is, did you follow the news about CES? The choices are yes, avidly. I checked it out once or twice. And CE what now? And, of course, our listeners who are willfully ignorant about so many things, their choice CE what now, followed by I checked it out once or twice, and only four people said yes avidly. Now, we know that simply clicking on a button is not enough for you. So when you are done clicking on that button, take a look at the yellow box underneath the poll. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you can then enter your opinion. We've got only a few so far, but we would love to hear more about you. And of course, if you'd like to talk to us about your favorite CES toy, or the thing you didn't see, or just your wish list for the New Year's toys, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, and we would be delighted, if not actually thrilled, to talk to you.
I have to apologize to the chemists in the audience. Gorilla Glass is actually not a polycarbonate silicate. It's an aluminosilicate.
See?
It's made from aluminum, not carbon.
Sure. So it's transparent aluminum.
Transparent aluminum. Scotty was right.
He was right.
And actually, it was invented in 1962, and they just brought it to market in 2008.
Right.
They finally found a use for it.
Well, they finally found a use for it, and they probably also finally found a way to make it inexpensively enough.
Yeah.
You know, it has a lot less to do with finding a use than it does finding a use that people are willing to pay for. I do love the fact that my phone has Gorilla Glass on it, because I'm not really very gentle with my phone.
Yep.
I have to admit that. I do have a case for it, but my old phone got scratched up pretty good. Apparently, I actually have steel wool for a beard, and that may well be the problem right there. But this thing has stayed pristine and gorgeous ever since I got it.
See, CNET ran an article on the booth babes of CES.
Of course they did.
And
of course, that was the first one you read about CES. Do you know what else happened to CES?
That's the first one I read. But iOmega is pushing their hard drives and backup software, so they had some interesting buttons being passed out by the booth babes.
How do you... I mean, I still am a little astonished. Of course, now, you know, I come from the day when a 10 meg hard drive was a lot.
Yeah.
And now you can buy a terabyte hard drive for $100.
Yep.
Holy mother of pearl.
We had a customer this week. We're quoting a new server. His current server has 160 gigs on it.
Uh-huh.
And he's using a 200 gig Ultrium tape drive for backup.
Uh-huh.
And that was enough.
See?
10 years ago.
It was enough 10 years ago. And you know what? For a lot of people, it's more than enough now.
Yeah.
Frankly, it is.
Yep.
But in the you know, for those of us who have just an amazing amount of stuff, it's a very different thing. Particularly pictures. Now, you know, you have kids and grandkids and whatever, the pictures and the video. Yeah. Now that every phone can take movies and, you know.
You used to be really careful about the pictures you took, because it cost money to buy the film and it cost money to buy the processor.
Yep.
And so now you take hundreds of pictures because you can.
Well, and that's the way, that's you know, I used to I still have many friends who are professional photographers, and of course they've all moved to video, to digital rather. But they used to say the main thing that separates a professional from an amateur is that a professional is not afraid to burn film. Yep. They'll take 500 pictures to get that one good one, yep. whereas an amateur will wait for the perfect shot. Now nobody has to wait anymore.
Yeah. You just keep taking pictures.
Right, right, right.
There's
actually way more to it than that.
Yeah.
I look forward to your letters, but I understand there's way more to it than that. There's that artistic eye and everything else. But, you know, they were basically saying that one of the problems that's the difference between amateurs and pros is that pros aren't afraid to burn film.
Right, yeah. And, well, like you say, you can sit there and go click, 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 and then right there in the camera, you know, oh, I don't like this shot. You can review them very quickly. And that's the other thing, the instant gratification, being able to turn it and show the person, well, what do you think of this?
Yep.
Whereas before, you took a shot and you just had to wait for the proofs to come back. And it was like crossing your fingers yep. and, you know, wait and see what you. Somebody wasn't squinting or something
yeah,
else
right.
like that. Well, that's a big thing they show now is, oh, yeah, they can take one picture and crop from this one and crop from that one. She put all the kids together.
Yeah,
so
right,
they weren't.
Right.
They were all looking straight forward and did it for the Christmas card.
Right.
That was kind of cute.
I also read an interesting blog from David Pogue of The New York Times when he was going through CES and you're assaulted by people wanting journalistic attention. And his point was, why in the world would you announce a product at CES when you have to compete with the 2,500 other companies announcing products at CES?
Yeah, it's true.
You're not going to get any journalistic attention.
It's absolutely true. What you should do is announce it a couple of weeks ahead of time and say, we'll be showing it there. Then you get all the attention of the journalists,
yep.
and then you can also show the product at CES. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please hold on. We'll get to you right after the break. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. Give us a call. You know the numbers. 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Zach on the line. Where are you calling from, Zach? Zach?
Yes, Brighton, New York.
Brighton, what can we do for you?
I have a hard drive-related question. My daughter recently got a Windows 7 laptop for college, and it's got a single hard drive, but it looks like it's got two partitions, C, which has the operating system, and D, which is designated data.
Right.
But
it's a recovery. It's a recovery section.
Not necessarily.
It's actually about 280 gigs.
Yeah, they've separated it into two partitions. Okay.
Right. So I want to make things simple for her. I mean, she backs up her data with USB drive and with an NAS, and so I don't really see any reason to have that. Can I? And what's happening is the C drive, that partition is filling up,
mm-hmm.
and eventually it's going to slow things down. So can I just use that computer management tool just to delete the D drive? And then
no.
But you lose everything.
Yeah, what you're going
well,
to have to...
nothing on it. That's what I'm saying. It's a
right.
pretty new machine. There's nothing on it.
Right, so you have to delete both partitions, make a single partition, and reinstall Windows.
No, you don't, actually.
Partition
can do,
magic.
Partition magic.
Well, or partition magic will do it, but also nowadays in Windows 7, you should be able to right-click on the drive. It's on the C drive.
Okay.
Live partition?
And under management,
in the control panel.
You can change the partition size.
Okay.
Where he's talking about...
You want to be very, very careful. And my suggestion is you make sure everything is backed up.
Okay,
and you make sure that in terms...
on the D drive, because everything by default, I mean, on the D partition is going
right.
on onto
the other
the
thing
partition.
You can do is simply change everything to go to the D drive.
How do you do that?
Well, in each program, when you do save, you tell it to go to the D drive.
Well, you can also set the defaults, though.
The advantage of separating your OS and your data is it does make it a little easier to back up your data because you back up that one partition.
Okay.
And if something goes wrong with the OS, it's much easier to reinstall the OS without risking your data.
I see.
But if something goes wrong with a hard drive, you lose both.
Right.
So that's the danger of it.
Okay. All right. So maybe I can just leave things the same and find some way for her to direct her documents and data to the D partition.
Right. In each program she uses, you can usually set a default file
location.
Yeah,
like in Word, you go into under preferences or options, and it'll usually say that it wants to default to, you know, the documents folder. Well, you can create a documents folder on the D partition and just direct it to go there.
Okay. All right. Thanks
right.
very
and
much.
And then you can also move the entire My Documents folder over to D. Once you've gone in and told all of your applications that the default is D colon whatever you call it, you can even call it My Documents again, you can then copy all the stuff from the original My Documents over to that My Documents.
Okay.
Right? The one from C to the one from D. And then from then on, everything she saves will be there. Now, that also means you have to change her backup software to backup from D. So it's a little more complex than just moving it. But in the long run, I think that'll be, you know, as good or, you know, it's one or the other. You either change the partition, which is dangerous, or you change the defaults for all the programs, which is fiddly.
Okay.
Although changing the partition now when there's nothing on it is the probably one of the safest ways to do it before you have anything on it.
Right.
And
as
I've posted a link on how to change the partition using that disk manager.
Okay, because it virtually has nothing on it now.
Yeah,
that might be the easiest thing to do then. Yeah, follow that link, change your partition, but make sure you have all your data backed up and make sure that you've got all the disks for all the programs in case the worst does happen and you have to reinstall Windows and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, what most computer companies do is they use that second partition as the restore disk. They don't give you physical disks anymore. It's a restore disk. Some companies use a hidden partition that does that. So when you start looking at your partition table, you may see that hidden partition for your restore disks.
Yeah, this is takes up the majority of the drive, and it's just listed data. So it's not restore. I did make restore disks when the computer came.
Good
new.
For
I
you. So few people do that.
Yes.
Do you have time for one other question?
Very quickly.
Annoying Windows habit. When I wanted
we don't have time for that.
From the desktop, and I drag it into the recycle bin, it always asks me, well, this is just a shortcut and not the program. Do you want to delete it? Is there any way just to get it to stop asking me that and to directly delete those kind of things?
Yes, there is. Where that is a very good question.
It's
hold on a second.
Some kind of tweak, I guess.
Is it in Power Tool?
It's in Properties. It's in Properties of the Recycle Bin. So if you right-click in the Recycle Bin, one of the choices is Display Delete Confirmation Dialog.
Yep.
Okay.
And you can turn that off, and then it won't. It shouldn't at least ask you anymore.
All right. Hey, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bye.
Have fun.
Yeah, that 99 times out of 100. Yes, I wanted to delete that. But that one time. Oh, thank you for stopping me.
Well, the good news, of course, is that throwing it in the recycle bin doesn't actually delete it.
Right.
So you can always go back and get it. The bad part of that is I know people who actually use the recycle bin as a storage medium.
Yep.
No.
Make a folder next to the recycle bin that says almost ready to trash.
Right.
And use that as your storage.
Right.
It's because quite often when your hard drive starts to get full, one of the things the computer does, you'll get that disk cleanup option, and one of the things it does is empty your recycle bin for you.
Right.
Whether you wanted it to or not.
Yeah, exactly. All right, our next caller is Marie from Chi-Li, New York. Welcome, Marie. What's your question?
Thank you. I have a question about wireless. If a laptop is all set up with wireless to use from outside of your home, from outside of your own system. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work in some places. Why would that be? And the reason I'm asking is because my nephew, I have to call for him because he's got some disabilities. And he went to the library, actually, and he couldn't get the library information. He did get the initials of the library. I didn't see what he's got, so I can't tell you exactly. But
One question for you, just before we get too deep into this.
Yeah.
How old is the laptop?
It was purchased in 2005.
Right there is probably your issue. See, what they do quite often is when they're setting up the security, or you know, in the various routers. Mm-hmm. See, his might be only able to do WPA.
Yeah, there's
WEP. which is the old one.
There's different kinds of encryption that you can put on the wireless signal. And quite often when you go to a place, you need to get the password from them before you can get onto the wireless network.
But his might not be able to do it if there's WPA2 or higher.
Right. And in fact, that could be the problem. The other problem is that many places do have encryption, and you have to get both the name of the wireless router, which you can name them whatever you want, and you might also need a password. So if you don't have both of those, and of course, often the password is case sensitive and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have all of that together, you may not be able to get on. And of course, an older laptop might only be able to do, as Dave said, WEP, but it also might only be able to do one version of, there are many versions of wireless, A, B, G, N, and they may have a newer router that doesn't do the old version.
The other thing that can happen, too, is if there is no password on the wireless, you have to go in Windows, you have to go into the Wi-Fi, what do they call it, the Wi-Fi connection tab, and tell it you'd want to connect to an unsecure network, because that's potentially dangerous. So you have to go through a second step to connect into a network without a password.
Now, theoretically, the people at the library should be able to help you with most of that.
Yeah, he did ask for help, and somebody tried. Maybe it was the wrong person, I don't know, but somebody tried, and then the only comment he remembers she made was something about maybe you need to get rid of your firewall, and I don't know what, I don't know.
Yeah, that should not be the problem at all.
No.
That shouldn't be in the way at all. But,
okay.
So I really think that...
What you may have to do, though, is since you're connecting to what the computer considers a foreign network, you have to tell the firewall to let traffic through.
Okay.
That foreign network, not a network it's already seen before.
Maybe.
So some firewalls like Zone Alarm will pop up and say, "Oh, I see you're on a new network. What do you want to do? Do you want to let traffic through, or do you want to block it?"
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the nice thing about Zone Alarm. So I don't know which firewall he's using, but it would seem to me that the problem is what you're asking is fairly fiddly.
Yeah.
In terms of,
there's a number of variables that a technician would have to see and test out for you.
Well, what about depending on where he is, because location? Because I know this laptop was used a number of times by my sister in a variety of locations.
Again, depending on the time
that
it was used and the security that they're currently using.
Yeah.
Back when she was using it, they might have been doing WPA.
So a technician,
I'm sorry.
A technician would have to set it up so that he could use it in the library, because
because the problem is the computer is probably working fine. It's the specific settings he needs at each specific location.
But his network card might not be able to do that type of security.
No, that's right.
You won't know that until you get to that specific location.
Right.
Right.
So even a technician
because of the age of the machine, would know whether or not it's possible off the bat. Then if it is possible, how to do it.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I can't, you know, we're not there with it, so it's hard to, it's hard to do that. But you've got the broad brush outlines, at least. Somebody needs to look and see if, in fact, his laptop is capable of doing that type of connection, and if it is, how to do it.
See, in current scenario right now, if you get a brand new laptop right now, and I was going to connect to, say, a coffee shop, and I would be given, you know, if I had my security, I could pick, say, from five different options out of my security of the network card. Whereas your machine is a lot older, so the playlist is a lot less. I've only got maybe one or two selections to pick from.
Right.
And if it's the, you know, the newer laptops, they can go up to the higher security, which is probably what the library is using, because they don't want people getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas yours can't do it because it's that old.
Okay.
Understand?
Yeah.
I just found an interesting description on how to connect your computer to the wireless network at the Monroe County Library System.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it's Monroe County, Indiana.
It's not Monroe County, actually. But...
at least you've got the broad outlines now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
Oh, so I can go in there, too?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Anybody can. That's, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you another quick question
Very
for myself?
Quickly. Sure.
If you are on, say, your email or whatever website you're on where you need to log out, where it says sign out or log out, mm-hmm. and if something happens and you don't, is there harm that's going to – I mean, is there any problem? I've never had a problem doing it over the years, but what's the big
you
deal
mean,
about
you, in other words,
out?
You just close out your browser?
It just – something would happen
Here's the deal with that. Mm-hmm. If it's a private computer, if it's your computer,
yeah,
not right. a problem. If it's somebody else's computer or it's a public computer like at the library, that could be a real problem because when the next person opens up the browser and goes to that same site, probably your cookie is still active and the system will think it's you.
Okay.
And so they'll be in your email.
Okay.
And able to do whatever they want.
Okay. All right. Well, it's always at home with mine, so it shouldn't be a problem.
And if you're the only one who uses your computer or whatever,
There you go.
That's not a problem then.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's a cautionary tale for all those of you who are listening at home. If you are using a public computer and you log into something, log out when you're done. Although I... personally, well, you know, if you're in a place like the library, whatever, maybe, I don't know. I worry about keystroke loggers and things like that. It's awful easy to stick a USB card, a USB thumb drive into a computer where nobody can see it. Some of them are awfully small these days and run it like a keystroke logger, collect a bunch of information, and then come back and get it at a later date. So I worry about doing things like that at a public computer, but that's just me. I'm cynical.
Yeah, it's possible that someone could come down and add something like that. Or if you're buying something in Amazon, you get up and walk away. Somebody else comes in, sits down at that computer. They could still be at Amazon under your name. So if you log into something, it's very important to log out of something or at least close the browser. Most of the cookies time out eventually, which is really annoying when I'm on a site for a long time and I have to log back in again.
Right.
But, you want to make sure you get logged out.
And of course, I admit to being overly suspicious. I am a curmudgeon. My wife got me a shirt that said, "Curmudgeon, don't say I didn't warn you."
There you go.
All right, our next caller is Carolyn from Greece, New York. Is it Carolyn or Caroline?
Carolyn.
Well, we got it right.
Yes, you
what
did.
Can we do to make you
Thank
happier
you.
Today?
We've been looking at some backup software for Ubuntu called Back in Time. I was just wondering if you had any experience with it or have any knowledge of it.
I have not used Back in Time myself.
Okay.
No, but it is a pretty new nice. It's inspired by Time Vault. I know that, and basically, it does things the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, and it does have a GUI interface. It certainly looks like a pretty nifty project.
Okay.
It's not the one I use. I wrote my own scripts and do all kinds of weird things myself. But
yeah.
Back in Time does look a pretty neat product. There's also stuff already built into Ubuntu already. Backup CC and a couple of others that are already built in. Archaea. That's more enterprise stuff, VBackup, and a couple of others. It might not hurt to try those. Well, yeah, I mean, it's your choice, certainly, but from my point of view, I prefer to do free before I start paying for things.
Sure.
Can't hurt to try them out. There's Lucky Backup, and there's just a bunch of them out there. Mm-hmm. Bacula is one of the most popular, Backup Ninja. And they're all part of Ubuntu. So, if you were to go into Systems Administration Synaptic Package Manager,
mm-hmm.
you can install or remove those. Or actually, from applications, go to the Ubuntu Software Center, and you should be able to install any of those you want.
Okay. Well, from what I understand, this does incremental backup.
Well, and that's never a bad thing.
Okay.
That's never a bad thing. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like a good product. It looks like it's pretty solid. Go for it.
Okay. Well, there's a button on here called Refresh Back, Refresh Snapshot.
Hold on a second, Carolyn. Hold on. We got to take a break.
Okay.
We'll come back to you back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites.
Okay.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we have Carolyn on the line from Greece. And you were asking, are you there, Carolyn?
Yes, I am.
You were asking about back in time and their refresh.
Yes, if I'm understanding it's incremental backups correctly, the first time I take a snapshot, it'll back up everything in the folders that I specify.
Right.
And then after that, if I take another snapshot, say in a couple of days, it'll only store what's new or changed.
Right. If you back up incrementally, here's the problem though.
Okay.
What that means is if you have to do a restore.
Yep.
You have to restore your full backup plus every incremental since then.
Okay.
So it's easier to back up, mm-hmm. but you don't necessarily have a full backup every night.
Yeah, it's easier to back up, but a little harder to restore.
Okay. Right. Well, yeah, because there was a button on the software that said refresh snapshots, and I wasn't quite sure what that meant.
All that does is make sure that you've got... Apparently, they've had a problem syncing what you see with what's actually on the drive, and refresh snapshot just refreshes the view.
Okay. Okay. Because part of this software is... depending on what time frames you specify, it'll go back and delete old snapshots. And to me, if you do that, it seems like you'd be breaking some kind of a chain or something.
Well, if you use incremental backups, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah, that didn't make sense to me. And because it seems like you would have to keep the original.
You would have to keep the original.
It probably deletes the oldest changes, but not the original.
We don't know that.
Right.
But
yeah.
the reality
yeah, why
is,
take the chance?
What we do is, what we do at work is we do a full once a week and an incremental every day. And we don't do an incremental. We do a differential,
uh-huh.
which means everything since the last full backup. So if we have to...
Differentials are better.
If we have to restore, it's only two sets of files. One, the original, and then the latest differential.
And okay, so the differential is since the original.
Since the last full backup. Now, that means... We back up full once a week,
yes.
and then every night we do a differential. So the differential doesn't take nearly as long, but what it means is, let's say it dies on a Thursday, we only have to restore the full from Saturday, say, and Wednesday night.
Okay, you know what? Maybe that's what this one does instead of incremental.
Well, if it says incremental, it's doing incremental.
Yeah.
If it says differential, it's doing differential, and what you want is differential.
Yeah, I have to go back and read it, because it uses rsync... and diff.
There you go. Differential would probably be the diff, but you want to read the documentation.
Just to double check.
That's my problem. I haven't found a whole lot. So, because there's a help button on there, but when you press it, you don't get any help.
Yeah, and there's documentation on the
and it's one screen
server,
full.
But yeah, there's not a lot of that.
It's
just a change log.
It starts out, why did I write this? Because I like Apple's Time Machine. So I wrote this for Linux.
Yeah.
Okay, now, is it necessary to back up the whole home directory for Linux, or just your data?
Your data are in the home directory.
Really? I know that, but my home directory is a lot bigger than just my data. So is it necessary to back up the whole home directory?
Well, no. I guess it depends on what else you've got in there.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know what you've got in there, but for example, I don't back up my download directory because, honestly, I can always download everything that's in there again.
Sure.
I just back up my documents directory.
What about email? On the Mac, that's stored in a library. It's not stored in documents.
Right. Well, I use
IMAP anyway.
IMAP anyway, so it's all up on the server.
So it could be that your mail program doesn't store your mail archive in your documents folder. It's somewhere else in your home directory.
Yeah.
Right, and those things you have to hunt down if you're going to do...
Right.
Real backup.
Or just back up the whole home directory.
Mm-hmm. Well, assuming it's in the home directory, right.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck. I love to hear from people who are using Ubuntu.
And to everyone else, make sure you have a backup. And every once in a while, look at your backup drive. Make sure the backup is still running and make sure it is backing up your files. It's not a question of if your drive will fail. It's a question of when your drive will fail and you'll lose files.
Yeah. We just finished... an IT audit at work. The auditors came in and gave us a little bit of a scrubbing.
Yeah.
We came through with flying colors. I'm delighted to say I'm very proud of my guys. They loved us. One of the questions that she asked me was, how often do you test your backups? I said, 3 or 4 times a week. She said, what? I said, we have people who lose, you know, erase the document that they really need, and they ask us, do we get at least 3 or 4 restores a week? So in, aside from the official testing we do of our of our backups, we know they work because at least 3 or 4 times a week we're restoring something.
One thing also to keep in mind is quite often backup programs can't backup open files.
Right.
So
right.
Quit all your applications to let your backup run. We've had several customers that have had like large database files that end up never getting backed up because they're always open.
Right. Close everything. You're absolutely right. Close everything every night before your backup starts. All right. Our next, do we have time?
Yeah.
Another caller. Our next caller is Chris from Greece, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Yes. I have an Apple iPad, and I've wanted to update to the OS 4 for a while, but I didn't have enough space on my laptop. So I did a lot of things, reboot, uninstall, or whatever, but I finally got brave enough, and I moved my iTunes off onto an external, and it was about 54 gigs. It does work. I've updated my Shuffle. I've updated my iTouch. I'm trying to update my iPad, but it's still, even now after 12 hours or so, saying I could have low space, and I don't understand why.
How much free space is on your main hard drive?
At least 54 that I took off the iTunes.
Well, you copied your iTunes directory. Did you delete it from the original hard drive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
And did you empty the trash?
Yes, I did.
All right. So on your main hard drive, when you open a window, it says there's 50 gigs free?
Yeah,
54. How much?
The same amount that I took off, so that's how I know that it did go over and it did erase.
How big is your iPad, and how much stuff did you already have on it?
Well, my iPad is the biggest you can get. So
64.
What's that, 60, whatever?
64,
really
right.
Sure.
So it's trying to... It,
and
one
it says it has 24 gigs free, though.
So it's got 30 gigs. Well, the one thing that iTunes does, especially before it updates the OS, is it backs up your iPad. So it's going to copy that whole 30 gigs onto your hard drive.
Correct. And I'm just wondering, why would I still have low space, though, when I know I had 54 free that I just took off with the iTunes?
It may be using it for the backup.
Correct. So there should still be enough. I mean, it may take a long time. I understand that because I haven't been able to back up for a long time because I haven't had any. Should I go ahead and just update without the backup, would you suggest?
I don't know if it lets you do that, but you can try. Potentially what could happen is if the backup fails, your iPad will crash and you need to erase it and reinstall everything.
Yeah, I don't want to. I've got quite a few pictures on there. I've even tried to, like, unsync certain things so that it would be less, but that really doesn't have anything to do with the backup.
Yeah,
correct?
So if you're syncing the iPad to your computer, it's copying that, say, 30 gigs onto your computer, and then when you back up, it needs another 30 gigs to do the backup. There's also an option in iTunes that will report... I forget what the actual text of the message is. It's something about report progress to Apple. And if you let that turn on when it asks you, that can really extend the time it takes to back up.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I know I'm just still on step one, and it's been over, you know, like 24 hours. So
is the progress bar still moving?
In and deleting apps and that type of stuff before I back up. I mean, that's the only thing I could really think to do that might help it.
Try to free up more space on your internal drive.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't tell iTunes, please use the D drive?
Yeah, when you move your iTunes folder, you tell iTunes this is where the new folder is.
Well,
but it doesn't
it automatically
do that
because that's where the external...
No, it does not automatically
iTunes
do that.
Is.
You have to tell iTunes that you moved your folder.
Well, I assume they knew that since it worked already to update my Shuffle and my iTouch.
No. What probably happened is it made a new iTunes folder on your internal hard drive. If you didn't tell it you moved the iTunes folder, it still is looking on your internal drive.
When I click on the iTunes button on my hard drive, on my laptop, it does automatically sync it to the external. So it knows that. The preference, I changed it to the E, you know, it's actually an external E drive.
Right. Oh, so you did tell iTunes you moved the folder.
Yeah, I did.
So then it should know. The the progress bar in iTunes, is it still moving?
Slow but surely. This last time since I went in, this last time before I tried it again, I updated to iTunes 10, and it would only move maybe, it's probably moved maybe an inch now.
But it is moving.
But it is slowly moving, but it's still...
How old is this laptop?
Yeah, how old is your computer? Maybe it's USB 1. We were just talking about that earlier.
My computer is 10 years old, and I mean, not 10 years, 5 years old. It's got XP 64-bit, and it only is like 100 gig.
Do you know if it's USB 1 or USB 2? From the sound of it, it sounds like the laptop only has USB 1. And I actually had a customer this week. They had a 30-gig hard drive, and it took 5 hours to copy 30 gigs over USB 1.
That would be a good question. I don't know.
How long does it normally take to upgrade or to copy?
Well, see, I didn't really do anything with the Apple iPad because I didn't have to.
It's pretty likely that the problem is your laptop has the oldest version of USB on it, which is very slow.
Okay.
So if the progress bar is moving, I'm afraid all you can do at this point is be patient.
Okay, that's all I needed to know, too, because I can be patient. I just didn't know if there was something else, and my laptop was now giving me a report again that, well, I've got low storage, and I thought, I don't know why that would be.
Well, open my computer window and see how much space is free on the main hard drive. It's probably the backup files from the iPad are now filling it up again, and you may need to free up more space.
Or it's temp files.
But if
temp
I
files,
move 54 yeah. off, and I know I haven't used 54 on the iPad, I don't know why there should be an issue.
Well, low space because doesn't mean no space, right? So it may be saying, you know, you've got less than 20 gig or less than, you know, 25 gig. It depends on what XP in that machine considers low space.
I gotcha. Okay.
Right?
And it could be the backup. Say you have 30 gigs on your iPad, it may need more than 30 gigs to back up. It may do.
Often what happens is it when you're doing backups, it often saves two copies. One, the partial copy as it's downloading something, then it copies all those pieces and parts together to the final file. That all happens in the background. You never see it, but those pieces and parts take up more room than the final copy itself. What I often tell people is if you think you're going to need 30 gigs, you better have 50 gigs free.
Okay. And now, 50... my external that I just bought that I put the iTunes on is 750 gigs. Is there a way for me to get it so that it would be backing up over there and then it wouldn't be an issue?
I'm pretty sure it backs up into your system partition rather than the iTunes folder.
Well, if it's using the temp files, you can change the temp folder to that, but then it's changed there forever, and you better not ever unplug that E drive.
Or change the temp folders, sync your iPad, and then change the temp folder back to C drive.
Yeah, you could, but you better remember to.
Yeah.
Yeah. My other just question is, with the external, I can't back up with Carbonite anymore, and I use Carbonite. So obviously I'm looking at a new computer, but some of these new computers have dual things. Does that mean that one of those wouldn't be backed up?
It depends on how you set your backup. You can back up anything. You just have to tell it to do that. And I'm afraid we have to go.
Thank you very much, guys. You helped a lot.
Thank you so much, Chris.
And I want to take this moment to remind you folks that coming up on March 12th, that is March 12th, you want to mark it on your calendar, from 10 to 1, we're going to have a pancake breakfast here at Grease Olympia High School. And the breakfast is going to feature all the pancakes that you can eat. I mean, you can stuff your face with sausage, orange juice, and coffee. And both the Polka Bandstand Show and Soundbites are going to be airing in their respective slots right there in the cafeteria. So while you're enjoying a great breakfast, you can also take the time and have, you know, entertainment right there, whether it be your polka music or the Soundbites. Now, here's the challenge, though, and we're putting it up there, that I'm asking you folks. Tickets are going to go on sale the 24th, and you can also order them online. They're a mere $5, and children 5 and under.
What? Only $5 for all the pancakes you can eat?
All you can eat.
Unbelievable.
Sausage, juice, and coffee.
Unbelievable.
And kids 5 and under, they come for free. But here's the challenge, though. See, we've been doing it since we came here to this station. We've been trying to go up against the polka dots and beat them. This is a fundraiser for the station. And I'm asking you folks, our loyal listeners to Soundbites, that when you call and order your tickets, let them know that it's for Soundbites. I really want to be able to put the polka dots to shame this time in something that I know we can do. And that's get a lot of our listeners, because I know when we do remotes, you folks come out and show your support. Well, I'm asking you to put down on your calendar March 12th and show up, and you can come for the whole afternoon. I mean, from 10 to 1. You know, we're going to be maybe even sliding into the kitchen. You might even see Nick, Steve, and I flipping pancakes earlier before this, you know, our show goes on. So, really, put the date down and come down for a great day of, you know, fun, food, and for a lousy $5, and it will help support the station.
We'd love to see you there. We'll be there. We'll be broadcasting live from the cafeteria. Come early. And we'll be there flipping pancakes. You can chit-chat with us and then even ask your questions on the air if you want to.
I mean, weather is not going to be an issue. I mean, this is something you can't sit there and say, well, you know, the weather is kind of bad. It's going to be inside. It's inside the Greece Olympia cafeteria. So, you know, there's no excuse for, you know, bad weather or that type of stuff. Just come on down. Bring the kids, the whole family. It's great entertainment, great music from 10 to 12. And then from us from 12 to 2. So, you know, please come down, be part of the fun.
I think it'll be awfully nice. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call. You know the numbers. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Join us on IRC chat. It's Octothorpe Soundbites, and or Pound Soundbites for the rest of you. And, of course, we'll take a Twitter. We are on Twitter at sound_bites. Back in just a couple of minutes right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and our friend Linda is calling from Greece, New York. Hello, Linda. How was your holiday?
Well, fine, except that I had eye surgery this past Wednesday.
Oh, well, I hope you're recovering nicely. Yeah, what can we do for
you? I am. You know, it's just something I've done every 10 years because I have a lot of family problems with eyes. But that's not what I called about.
Okay.
Happy New Year, guys.
And same to you.
Okay, question. I have my new laptop that I told you about. Okay.
Right.
I've got a Seagate 500 gig external hard drive. On my desktop computer, I've got a D drive that's got all my iTunes music on it, and that's 500 gigs. Okay. A friend of mine tried to do the exact same thing I want to do, and she had problems. What she did was she had a separate drive. She took her desktop and moved it over to her laptop, which was, you know, she has a terabyte on her laptop. I don't know, whatever. And so she moved it over. But when she moved it over, it put it in individual files. And it took her 3 days to take all her individual files and put it in iTunes on her laptop. Okay? Once she did that, when she went to click on something, it says it couldn't find it. What did she do wrong?
She didn't copy it right. Inside iTunes, there's a command to tell iTunes where your music library is. And if you want to change your music library, you change it inside of iTunes. And then it copies the files for you, and it knows where they are.
Okay, so I don't think I'm not sure I understand.
Yeah,
but
if you just drag your iTunes folder to a new drive, iTunes won't know where it is.
Well, she took her D drive and put it on the external drive.
Right, which is the same thing. You're just moving the thing somewhere else without telling iTunes internally that you did that.
So where in the iTunes on my desktop would I go? Where in the iTunes? I mean, you know, I see a lot of columns, but where would I go in there to do that?
Yeah, it's in Preferences under Advanced, I think it is.
Okay.
There's a location for your iTunes music folder.
Okay.
And you have to tell iTunes where you want your folder to be or where it is, and then it can use it from there.
I'm not sure I understand. I'm still confused.
Well, basically, iTunes doesn't know where your music is since you've moved it to a different drive. So you have to tell iTunes where you moved it to.
So under Advanced,
yeah.
In Preferences. So you go into Preferences.
Okay, I put that on. This is going to my external drive, correct?
Well, you're in iTunes right now. So under Preferences, inside iTunes.
Right.
Under Preferences, under Advanced.
Right.
You can tell iTunes where the iTunes folder is.
Okay.
And it still thinks it's on the C drive when your friend has actually moved it to the E or whatever the letter is.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it can't find
it. She's got it on the D drive, so I would go in there and say, my iTunes folder is on the D drive.
Right. You actually point right to the folder.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And so then iTunes will go, oh, look, there's your folder.
Okay.
And everything should be fine then.
Yeah, because I went in the Best Buys and I asked the gentleman that question, and he says to me, you know, she transferred it over, you know, and then the guy said to her, well, did you leave it plugged? Did you leave your external drive plugged into your laptop when you went to select those things? She says, no. So when she goes to, you know, it's right. All on her laptop, and every time she goes to select it, it says, we can't find it.
Well, then what's happened is she's already told it to go over to the E drive, and when the E drive isn't there, it can't find it. iTunes will only accept one place for the music. If she's got it in two places, and iTunes that it's on the E drive, and then you haven't got the E drive plugged in, it can't find the music. It can't do multiple places.
So in other words, whenever she wants to play iTunes on her laptop, the external drive has to be plugged in.
Or she goes back into iTunes and says it's really still on the C drive.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I mean, you have to make that choice, but you can't have it in two places
and
expect iTunes to find it in two separate places simultaneously.
People with laptops will often do this. They'll have a small library on their laptop hard drive and then their full library on an external drive. And you tell iTunes where the library is you want to use now. And you have to change it.
Okay. One more quick question. I bought Professor Teacher's Windows 7. Is that something good to learn for Windows 7?
Certainly a lot of people like the Professor Teacher series. I personally haven't used it. I apologize.
Okay. Because I saw something on TV. I was at HSN where I got my laptop, and it shows on the desktop how you can scroll through folders on your desktop. I still haven't been able to figure out how to do that.
Well, check the Professor Teacher series.
Yep.
It should help you out.
Okay. That's I missed you guys. I know, because you were off for 2 weeks.
I know. It was very exciting for us.
How was your Christmas? Did you get any electronic toys?
I did not. Yeah, I did not. I got
me neither.
I got all analog stuff. It was wonderful.
Because I know you were looking for something that's very expensive. I remember you saying that.
Well, what I'm looking for is a Nook Color.
That's
and I'm hoping to get
you
one.
I'm getting
one in February.
Actually. Okay.
And I'll talk more about that at some later point.
Another thing. I sent you an email at nick@asknick.com at the beginning of December, and I never heard from you.
Yeah, I've been having a little trouble with asknick.com. For all those of you who are on asknick.com, I've been having some trouble with that. It's my fault entirely. I'm getting it all fixed. And I hope to be back up very soon now that it's the new year and things have settled down a little bit.
So I thought to myself, well, I know Nick would respond.
I would if I'd gotten it, and I'm sure I'll get it when everything is fixed. And it's entirely my fault that things went bad,
and
I'm in the process of fixing it.
So now when can I get the tickets? The 24th of January?
Yep.
Okay. You know I'll be there.
I know.
Okay, well, we'll see you then,
and
you take it easy there, Linda.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that's going to be some fun. I'm very looking forward to that. Don't forget, it's the pancake breakfast. Starts at 10 in the morning. We'll be there flipping pancakes. And we'll then do the first hour of our show live from the pancake breakfast. Of course, the second hour, it'll be over by then, I guess. But
we'll probably still be there.
We'll still be there, and yeah. I'm sure that they're going to have to drag people out bodily, so I'm sure we'll still be there.
Well, they'll probably stop serving around 1 o'clock. That doesn't mean folks can't still hang around.
Yeah. All right, our next caller is Henry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hello, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I've got a memory-related question, actually.
Sure.
I have an older PC. It's about 7 years old. It's running Windows XP. It only currently has 512 meg memory. And I've noticed lately some of the newer versions of programs, it's been slowing up in that. So I want to add some new memory to it. And I checked the manual that came with the PC. It says the motherboard has two slots. Each of those will take 184-pin non-buffered, non-ECC DIMMs up to a maximum of 1 gig.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, fine. I'll go out and get a 512, another 512.
Right.
Went out to the Internet. I was looking around. Went to a couple of the sites that sell memory, one of them being Kingston.
Oh, yeah.
And on there, they give you the capability of plugging in your motherboard, and it will tell you what memory should go on there.
Right.
I used that, and I found the, you know, it came up. I was looking at it. It seems to match okay, but I noticed on there, they say the maximum is 2 gig. Instead of 1 gig. Now, I'm wondering, is that, and I also see that they recommend either 512 DIMMs or 1024 DIMMs, excuse me. So I'm just wondering, is it, should I believe the manual or should I believe the, and this has happened at several different places.
All right, there's a couple of things here, Henry. First, make sure that it's not just the type of computer, but also the exact model.
I did. I checked by motherboard.
The second thing is the BIOS. See if there's a go back to the manufacturer of the motherboard and see if there's a BIOS update. It may well be that the original BIOS would only go to a gig and that a BIOS update would let you have 2 gig.
Okay, I did do that. The problem is whenever I go to the motherboard, and I noticed this on the other sites too, I go to the it's an elite group, and whenever I went to their site, I see my model number there, but they have different versions of it.
Well, exactly, and that's the point I'm making.
And I how can I find what version I have?
They would be able to tell you that. Usually it's stamped somewhere on the case or on that little sticker that gives you the serial number and all of that stuff.
Or on the motherboard itself.
Or on the motherboard itself.
Okay.
Which means you're taking apart that laptop, which is, well, it's
tricky.
7 years old.
Yeah, it's a desktop.
Oh, okay. And also, quite often, when computers are released, there's certain memory issues. You know, maybe when that computer was released, 1 gig was the most memory there was available. And in the meantime, you know, since then, larger memory capacities have come out.
I mean, I'm just wondering if maybe back then, and
yeah,
this would have been like 2003,
right,
2004,
yeah, that's
there were only 512 meg available DIMMs,
right,
and now they've got the 1024, and it's just a matter of now they've got them available,
right,
and I can put them in easily.
Yep.
Well, what I would do is I would look for tech support on the site of your desktop,
okay,
on the company that, you know, made your desktop, and say, here's my type, here's my model number, look on the motherboard and get the version number. Can I buy 1 gig DIMMs?
The other thing to look at is you may want to open the computer and look into it, because that 512 RAM you have now, maybe two 256s. You may have to install.
No. I run Belloc Advisor against it. It tells me that 512 is in slot A0. Slot A1 is empty.
Good. That makes it easier to upgrade.
Yes.
Right. And if I would make contact with tech support at the company that made your motherboard. I would give them all the information, and I would say, can I put 2 gigs in this machine? If they say yes, then you can either buy one gig stick and have a gig and a half, or buy 2 1-gig sticks, throw away the 512, and get 2 gigs.
Well, if I can, I'll probably put up 2 gig and then save the 512 in case one of those dies, I have a backup.
Right, but the idea is make sure that you get the info direct from the manufacturer.
Okay, Okay, I just thought maybe it was easy as didn't have them back in 2003.
Could be.
It's possible. It's possible.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's more likely that the original BIOS wouldn't take more than 1 gig.
Yeah.
And that a BIOS update would let you take more.
Yep.
Because they certainly had bigger DIMMs in those days.
Yeah. I just read at CES, I think it was Samsung, announced the DDR4 memory that can run at some ridiculous speed, 30 megabits per or 30 gigabits per second, is it?
Yeah.
So now, see, that's the annoying part, is every new generation of computer uses a new type of memory, so the old memory won't work in a new computer. And the older memory is starting to get much more expensive because they've stopped making it because the newer memory is out. So it can be tough trying to upgrade older computers.
Yep. All right, our next caller is Cheryl from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Cheryl. What's your question?
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have a question about, I know I've heard you guys talk about that it's not good to run as administrator, and I think I've kind of been doing that on a new laptop without realizing it or thinking about it. We got a new HP laptop, and, you know, when you start it up, the first person puts their information in and mm-hmm. loads all their stuff, and I didn't think about it too much until I added another username for my husband recently, and then it's showing, showing that, you know, the first user, which is me, as the administrator. So I'm not sure, should I just create a third, a third user that would be my things, or I'm not sure how to get away from using all that original stuff that I set up.
Well, I don't know that you can. You can certainly set up a third person, make them an administrator, right? Set up admin or whatever you're going to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Call it something unusual so that people don't get that it's admin, right?
Right.
But set up a third user, give that person admin rights. Make sure it works. Then use that person to turn Cheryl into a regular user. You'll still have access to your stuff. Your husband will still have access to his stuff. And then that third person will be the administrator.
So how do I make that third person have the administrator rights?
You, as the administrator, can go into the administration panel and do it right from there.
When you create an administrator, or when you create a new user, you can tell that user to be an administrator.
Okay.
And then log into that new administrator user and change your account to a standard user.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's the other issue too is it's good to have a second account of any kind, so that if something happens to your one account, you can log into a second account.
Mm-hmm. Right. My suggestion is is make a couple of different admin accounts, but give them different and make not only unique but also not easy to think about passwords. And, you know, we've talked about how to make passwords, and one way to do it is to take a favorite line from a poem or a song and then just use the first character of each of those words, and that'll give you a fairly long, seemingly nonsensical password that you understand what it means.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
All right, thanks, Cheryl. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York, is on the line. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Welcome. Happy New Year to you, gentlemen.
And the same to you. Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable.
Good.
I finally have a response from the support people at the email webmail site. I called a couple of weekends ago before the Christmas break, and I was telling you that on some emails that I get when I use a webmail, not using like Outlook Express or anything like that. They upgraded their version, and almost on all the emails, I would get a security warning box that said, do you want to display the images? This is what they said I should do, and before I do it, I wanted to get your opinion on it. Basically, go into tools, go into security, and then go to custom level. Scroll down until you see miscellaneous, and then display mixed content, where they suggest I change the setting from prompt to enable. If I do that, they say the situation will correct itself. By doing that, am I going to be at risk of getting something bad on my computer, or is it just strictly an Internet Explorer issue where some graphics that are in emails will now come up properly without being asked?
First, why are you still using Internet Explorer? You know better. You've been listening to the show long enough.
At work, we only have Internet Explorer.
The second thing is, yes, if you enable mixed content, you can therefore be sent things that are, in fact, bad for you. It is possible to create an image that will give you a virus. It's not commonly done yet, but it is doable. And unfortunately, it's possible. I would not automatically allow pictures in my mail. Now, you should be able to say, don't show them to me unless I click on them. I mean, I don't know what your webmail program is, and it's not important to me, particularly since I probably wouldn't know it off the top of my head.
Right.
But a lot of them have an option that says, show a placeholder until I click on it.
Okay.
You know, or in each individual message, you should be able to, there should be a pull down somewhere under maybe view that says view images. And so you do that on an individual basis for those graphics that you actually want to see.
Yeah, but this is an IE issue. And while on my personal computer where I use Firefox, when I go to click on those emails that, like, for example, basically it's from, let's say, a store like Staples or another computer store, whatever, that they have images, and not even JavaScript where there's animation, but just whatever. Firefox will load that page properly, but if I use Internet Explorer, that same page will first give me that security warning, and then I have to click actually no, and then that will load the pictures in the email.
Yeah, the problem is legitimate sites often don't bother to encrypt pictures, so having that warning is good, but the bad guys will often not encrypt bad pictures, and so having that warning is good. So it's the annoyance is having the warning. The danger is you don't know whether it's warning you a good thing or a bad thing.
So is the problem with the webmail server or the people sending out those emails that the pictures are not done properly and there's a warning being popped up when an Internet Explorer is the browser?
That's part of what zone things are in. The other thing you might try to do is, see, no, again, well, that's...
See, the core problem is the bad guys have taken over the way, not taken over, but have usurped the way things work, and so you don't know whether you're getting a bad thing or a good thing. So you could say yes and get a bad thing. You could say yes and get a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The bottom line is if you say, show me the pictures, you are opening yourself up to bad stuff.
Understand.
And that's simply a decision you have to make.
Understand. But why is this not an issue when using Firefox?
It is. You've got your preferences set to not warn you.
Right.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look at that. And the other question, Nick, is only because Super Anti-Spyware is one of the programs that you suggest people use in the Tango. This week, there seems to be an issue where something's coming up in the registry that something called Rogue Palladium, and I'm looking at the forum page of Super Anti-Spyware, and this is all within the last couple of days that one of the responses was, well, you're using a version of Super Anti-Spyware that is almost a year old, and upgrade your version. I'm actually using the current version. I went to the website to see what the latest version is, and I'm using it, and I got the same thing when I ran Super Anti-Spyware yesterday. Everything was clean other than one issue in the registry. And the latest posting in the forum said something about declare it as a false positive. Should I be concerned that I have something?
What's the name of this program?
Rogue, R-O-G-U-E dot Palladium, P-A-L-L-I-D-I-U-M, with Super Anti-Spyware.
Because
there's a couple of postings said that they've run malware bytes and everything else and a couple of other programs, and they come up clean. And the last posting says basically is do a full scan.
Yeah. I bet if you did if you downloaded malware bytes or ran Super Anti-Spyware in safe mode, it wouldn't find it.
Okay.
So I suspect it's a false positive.
So that would be something with maybe their latest update or something,
but
that they called.
Rogue Palladium is a new malware program first discovered on January 3rd of this year.
Okay.
And Malware Bytes has descriptions of it too. So it's possible that your Super Anti-Spyware hasn't been updated to address it yet.
I did run right after I ran Super Anti-Spyware, and it said I got Rogue Palladium. I ran Malware Bytes, and it said I'm clean.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You want to uninstall Super Anti-Spyware.
Uninstall it.
And then re-download it and install it again. Apparently, there are some, particularly if you've had it for a while.
Yes.
There are some registry entries that were not properly updated in from very old versions. And so what they're saying is take it right out, reinstall it, and you're on your way.
So if I use Dave's favorite Reno uninstaller, that should do it?
I would also, there is a Super Anti-Spyware uninstaller assistant that they would prefer you use. And you can download that from their website. Steve will put up a link, but basically it's superantispyware.com/downloads/, and the rest is all capital letters, SAS. uninst.exe.
Okay. Well, let me do this, Nick, first. I'm going to run Super Anti-Spyware in the safe mode and see if I get that hit again. If I do, then I'll take it to the next level by uninstalling and reinstalling the program. But I wanted to see if
anybody...
Well,
you should do that anyway.
Okay, well, true.
Give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah.
Let us know.
All righty. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. All righty.
Bye-bye.
Okay, again, I want to remind you folks, while we got your attention here and between questions, is to remind you folks... Put down the date, March 12th. And for you folks that just tuned into us within the past hour, March 12th, we are going to have the very first, I mean, Rob and Laurel Ann, God bless their hearts. You know, they're trying to always come up with great ideas, and, you know, I can't say enough about them. But they've come up with this idea to have a pancake breakfast, and the Arundhati Kiwanis are going to be helping out. And you folks, for a mere, how much, Nick?
A mere... And it's ridiculous to think it's only going to cost $5 American money.
Yeah, for all the pancakes, orange juice, coffee, sausage that you want, to just come and just gorge yourself on that. We're going to have great giveaways. And, you know, you're going to be able to listen to the poker show go on from 12 to 2.
Live.
And then for us from...
No, they're 10 to 12.
10 to 2. I'm sorry.
They're 10 to 12. Then we're 12 to 2.
Thank you. I'm just so anxious.
I don't do time, man.
Well, the thing of it is, though, is while we're trying, we got this friendly competition going on. And that's what I want to stress, folks, a friendly competition going on that, you know, it's also our fundraiser. So all the proceeds are going to go to benefit and support member-supported Jazz 90.1. Remember, it is member-supported Jazz 90.1. I can't say that enough. And by you showing up or buying your tickets, and make sure that you let them know that, hey, I'm supporting Sound Bites. That is the key. Because I'd like to see if we can sell more tickets than the polka dots.
Yep. And we've said this often enough. We don't get national funds, state funds, city funds, county funds. We don't have bell ringers on corners. We get our money strictly from members and from fundraisers like this one. So we would love to have you come out. It's going to be a barrel of fun. We'll be cooking. I don't wait tables anymore, but we'll be cooking. We'll be flipping pancakes. It's going to get ugly in there, and I think the best show is going to be back in the kitchen. So please feel free to come join us. It's March 12th, and I think we're going to have plenty of fun. In the meantime, we're going back to the phones. We have Dave from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. This is a question, I think, for Steve. I've got a G5.
Wake up, Steve.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We had to nudge Steve.
That's okay.
He's an old fart, you know. He falls asleep.
Oh, me too. In any case, I think I made a mistake trying something with Suitcase, the application,
mm-hmm.
Where you can manage system fonts, because I had a conflict with some client fonts, Helvetica font. And I said, well, maybe this is the way to go, manage the Helvetica fonts that are in two places on the system. By the way, I'm running 4.11, and because this is on an old G5. There's the library file folder, there's the fonts in there, there's two Helveticas in there, and there's under system in library, there's the font folder with three Helveticas there. So the application moved these fonts to two different sets within Suitcase. And I've had all kinds of problems since I did this with font conflicts through email. In fact, the mail application, you know, uses Helvetica, and it didn't even occur to me when I was doing this. So I'd like to redo this. I mean, erase this problem that I've had. So I've got a backup set with everything the way that it was. And I'm wondering if I booted up the computer with the install disk that came with the computer, you know, hold down the C
mm-hmm.
key, whether I would be able to get in and out of with the backup set, you know, boot it up also, be able to get in and pull the fonts out of that backup set and put them back in the system folder on the computer and then take the Suitcase application and switch that out, you know, from the backup set, and whether that would put everything back to normal.
Well, it depends on which backup program you're using. If you boot the system CD, you can only restore from a Time Machine backup. If you have a bootable backup drive, then you can boot that drive and copy the files out. Or if you can see the files on your backup drive while you're booted from your main computer, you can just copy the files that way.
That's you know, because I've got... I think I got it from you guys, the La C drive with a silver,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, so you can see the fonts.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it all. So that install disk.
You can just copy them manually to back where they belong.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, Helvetica and Times are core system fonts, and you should never remove them from the system folder. Because then things don't work very well.
Yeah.
The problem is many other foundries use Times and Helvetica for their own fonts, and mm-hmm. you get different weights of Times on the Helvetica, and that's what causes a lot of the confusion.
Yeah.
So what most people do is they put all the Times in Helvetica into the system library so that they're all together and they can be used.
I see. So you think this would work, booting up from that disk?
You don't need to. Just copy the files back into your system folder.
It wouldn't let me do that.
It should.
It's corrupted the fonts.
Well, if they're corrupt on your backup drive, then you're screwed.
No, I mean not from the backup drive, because the originally Suitcase moved them to another location within those.
Yeah, I think he's not talking about the Suitcase files at all.
Copy the fonts from your backup drive back yep. into your primary drive.
Not from Suitcase, but from the fonts folder.
So I can, even with the just booting up from the computer generally without the install disk, right?
Right. The only thing you can do with the install disk is install the operating system again.
I wouldn't be able to see the computer and all the files and be able to do a manual.
Right. Not from that that restore disk.
Okay, because I tried the booting up from the AppleCare disk that I have with the Tech Tool on it.
That's a Tech Tool repair program.
Right, but that
all that does is run the repair program. Dave, you're trying to make this a whole lot harder than it is.
Okay.
The simple thing is, if you just look at that backup drive, you should see the system folder. You should see the fonts folder in that, and just pull those files, those Helvetica's, over.
And it won't
it's that simple.
While you're putting them into a running system?
No.
Okay. Okay.
They got to be running.
The system has to be running to put the files in.
Right. So it shouldn't. It should not be a problem.
Okay. And now I have another quick question. With this older computer, is there a way for me to be able to purchase from you like an iPod Touch to be able to, because I understand these only sync up with the latest system, and I can't run anything more than 4.11, right, on this G5?
Oh, the G5 can run 10.5. The current models of iPod require OS 10.5 and iTunes 10.
Okay, so can I, now where would I get System 5, though? Because that's no longer available.
Right, you would have had to have bought it when it's available.
Okay. Can your group install that?
If you can find a copy, sure.
Oh, I see. Okay. So I have to find a copy that somebody else has.
Right, that they can legally sell.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Sure, no problem.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the things that, you know, you got to give Apple credit. When it comes time to move to a new architecture, new way of doing things, they do not hesitate. Unfortunately, that leaves behind people who are still running the old machines. And there's certainly nothing wrong with the G5.
Right.
It's a nice machine. It just can't run all the new stuff.
And the big problem is he waited too long. Don't let yourself get more than one version behind on an operating system. Because when the next system comes out, you won't be able to buy the old one anymore. Microsoft is sort of a special case because so many people demanded XP, they kept buying it. But you can't buy Vista anymore because 7 is out.
Right.
And now you can't buy XP anymore because
7
is out.
You don't want Vista.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Gray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please hold on. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not, because we're all having fun here. Back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And patiently waiting on the phone is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Every time I reboot, I get an error message, avgrsx.exe, unable to locate component. And further explains it as this application has failed because msvcp80.dll was not found. Reinstalling the application may fix the problem, and I click OK, and it comes up with a message again. Now, I presume that's a Windows XP DLL, and how do I go about loading that or correcting that?
No, that's the AVG antivirus program.
What version are you running?
DLL, isn't that coming from XP?
But the error message is coming from AVG.
And what version of AVG are you running? Are you running 11? Or 9?
The latest one.
Hmm?
Probably the latest one.
Probably and for sure.
2011.
Yeah. Okay, yep, you got the right one then.
So uninstalling it and reinstalling it, like the message says, may work.
I did uninstall it and reinstall it. It didn't
happen. All right, let's step back here for a couple minutes, give you a little more of my experience. How old of a machine is this?
Oh, I don't know. It's 3 or 4 years old, but it's been, you know, a hard drive has been replaced, the motherboard has been replaced.
Mm-hmm.
What's the DLL file it can't find? What's that called again?
MSVCP80.dll.
Because one of the other things that I've run into, a number of folks, some machines, depending on their age and the motherboards, just don't like the newer version of AVG. I don't know why. Can't explain it. So the simple solution that I've found to get around it is I go ahead, uninstall AVG, and use a product called Avast.
Okay.
And again, Avast is free. It's great. I run it on two of my machines just upstairs alone, and it does a great job.
Okay.
So give that a shot, and you know, maybe that might solve your issues.
Very good.
I also just found a list of instructions to try for reasons why a program may not have this DLL and what to do. So it's a common problem with apparently in Windows that this DLL gets lost or missing.
That happens a lot with Windows, but yeah, really you can move from AVG to Avast or any one of the others, and that'll be very nice too. I've also been playing with Panda, which is pretty good actually. I'm very impressed by it. All right, our next caller is Tony from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Yes, this has to do with my iMac email. I try to send a link from a page I get on a net, and I get a message that an email message can't be created to send this link because Safari can't find an email application, and I was just wondering what's going on.
What email application are you using?
I'm using Mail.
Apple Mail?
Yes.
In the Apple Mail program, go into Preferences and make sure that it's set to be your default mail program.
Oh, okay. Apps and Preferences? Would you say Apps? Go to
right,
apps.
Yeah, go to the Mail program.
Yes.
And under Preferences, under General, make sure that Mail is set as your default mail reader.
Okay.
And that's right in the Mail program.
Okay. Could I ask another one, please?
Very quickly.
I get another message when I try to send a link, or when I try to send an attachment, it says you can use the mail application included with Mac OS X to send email. To do so, you might need to install mail using the Mac OS X installed disks. What's that all about?
It doesn't know what mail program to use because you don't have a default mail program set.
Oh, okay.
So it's telling you you might want to use the Apple Mail program. If you already are using it, it probably means it's not set as your default mail program.
So it's really two error messages caused by the same problem.
Okay, super. Thank you very much.
Absolutely our pleasure. Thanks, Tony. I'm surprised that it didn't set itself as the...
Well, he may have downloaded another mail program to try it out
and then deleted that. Happens too.
Sometimes we also see if you've had to reinstall your operating system...
It doesn't catch.
Well, then you have... The way the Apple installer does that is it archives your old files into a previous system folder, and so now technically you have two copies of the mail program. It may not know which one to use.
Right.
So setting it mail as the preference in mail is the way to fix that.
One of the other things I thought I'd bring up while we, you know, got some time here, is another big scam that's going around.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I got nailed. They tried.
Yeah.
They're sending me the traveler's checks and cashing those to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my friend of mine, Henry, had this item on sale at Craigslist, and it was a piece of artwork. And of course, they said, "Oh yeah, we'll take it sight unseen. We're going to send you the check. We want you to go ahead and cash it, keep your part, take out what you need for postage, and then send the artwork and the difference."
Oh yeah, no.
Down back to us, which you know would have been like a grand more, even after he pays for that.
Why are they sending you more money than you asked for? You got to stop and think, this is just...
That's why I'm trying to awake a lot of folks up to the scam has now moved to Craigslist. So if you folks are, you know, got anything on Craigslist and, you know, you're trying to sell stuff because it is that time of year, you know, folks are starting to, because they're in the house cleaning out stuff and thinking, oh, setting stuff aside for, say, a garage sale as soon as spring hits. Because believe it or not, it's not that far away. We're already into January. And they're going ahead and putting stuff on Craigslist. These idiots out there are trying to prey on people and making them, you know, sucker them in. The checks look legitimate. It's just like I was telling you with my story when they sent me the traveler's checks. The traveler's checks, folks, you would have sworn to God that they looked legitimate. But it was all in the seal that was phony as all get out. And a friend of mine who is an investigator pointed it out to me to show me. And he said, these are about as worth, you know, as much worth as toilet paper. Yep.
It's the smart bad guys you have to worry about. The dumb ones get caught really easy.
Yeah, right.
But if you reverse that and think of yourself, if you were buying something on Craigslist, would you send the guy more money than he needs, than he's asking for?
Well, and that's exactly right. That's exactly
right. Yeah, but a lot of these folks, and again, we get this with our callers all the time. Yep. They're not sure. They're novice users.
Yep.
They turn their computer on. They want to do their email. They're trying to compose some letters. They're trying to do work. They're not quite savvy to a lot of the stuff that's out there. And I mean, it blows their minds. They know enough to maybe pull up Internet Explorer or Firefox and use the browser to look up stuff. And yeah, they think that's great.
A lot of it is the what's the word I want? The presumed safety of the anonymity of a computer. But if you think of the analogous real world situations, you know, if you go to a store and mm-hmm. you know, someone says it's $20 and you say, oh no, I'm going to give you 50 for it. Well, that's not right. Yeah.
Right.
So if you walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging in your
pocket, when you have two tens in your pocket,
yeah,
and something costs $14, you get back change. But if something costs $14 and you hand them a $1,000 bill and say, give me the change, yeah, they're going to say no.
Yeah.
Just had another caller call us and thank us because he had heard previous that he was amazed that, you know, he's heard us say before, you know, go ahead and install Windows over Windows. Mm-hmm. And he just calls, just want to let you know, I put that in, like you said, and did a Windows over Windows, and all my stuff is still there.
Is
that normal? I go, yep.
Wow, it actually worked?
And he goes,
wait,
cool.
Something we suggested actually worked.
Shh, yes.
Well, it's a brand new year. Thank God we got it out of the way early.
Hey, you know.
The pressure's off now.
Even the squirrel gets lucky.
That's right. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. Absolutely. Unbelievable.
You know, we'll take it while we can get it and enjoy every minute of it. You know, right. I mean, what the heck? But yeah, folks, please, you know. Be very cautious.
Wait a minute. I got to say, it's very nice that somebody would call up and thank us. We don't get that a lot.
Yeah, true. No.
So I'm very delighted. Thank you, whoever
for taking
you were,
the time. Yeah,
Mr.
for taking
or Ms.
the time.
Anonymous.
And I mean, at least we're getting out there. You know, I mean, we're coming up this June. We'll be celebrating this June 2 years, folks. And you know, why got
here at Jazz Member Supported, Jazz 90.1.
And then come September, we start year 22. But what I can slide it in here one more time before we have to take off is I want you to mark down the date. And the date I'm talking about is March 12th here at Greece Olympia High School.
Are you writing this down? Because you should be.
Really. You know, and it's such a cheap date.
Well, that's us all over.
Yeah.
Believe me.
How much?
A mere $5 American money. Unbelievable.
For all the pancakes, sausage, coffee, and juice that you can drink and be entertained. From 10 to 12, you're going to hear the Polka Dots playing all their polka music. Ray and Al will be here doing the show live in the cafeteria. So you're going to be entertained while you're eating. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And then from 12 to 2, sound bites. But they're going to
serving at 1.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. They will be serving from 12 to 1.
From 10 to 1.
Or 10 to 1. What is it?
10 a.m. to 1.
I want to get everybody coming to our part of the show.
Yeah, I know that. We're serving from 10 to 1.
Yes, to be fair. And we might even be, you know, maybe for the first couple of hours flipping some pancakes.
I do not wait tables anymore, but I will flip.
No, I'm sure.
The hard thing is not flipping them right into your mouth.
What?
Well, no.
Maybe I won't be flipping them.
No, Frank and the rest of the guys, I can get an apron for you two guys and get you behind the grill.
I'll go behind the grill. I don't.
I mean, I've you know,
I waited tables for a lot of years. And
the
Kiwanis
group, you know, are going to be there, and you know, this is something I've done for a couple of years now, and it's a lot of fun. And I think, folks, you know, like I said, take the time, write it down on the calendar because you don't want to miss March 12th.
It's going to be way more fun than you can begin to imagine. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot of fun. All right, that's it. You've managed to waste 2 entire hours of your life. You'll never get them back again. Listening to this show, welcome to each and every one of you to a glorious new year. the beginning of the second decade of the 21st century. Yes, we're living in the future. I do not have a flying car, although with my old car, I contemplated a couple of cliffs, see if it would fly at the very least. But we're done for another week. We want to thank everybody who called in. We want to apologize to all of those of you, bless you, to whom we did not get. Call earlier and more often next week. And let's see if we can limit ourselves to one question apiece. It seemed to be a week of multiple questions. Back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.